Dig in. Let's get to business.
We're going to go places in this business, son.
No laptop, no BlackBerry, no business calls.
You have no head for business.
And now, back to America's business coach, Coach Ron Tunick.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank. I'm sitting in for Coach Ron Tunick, who's away in Las Vegas speaking to a large group in the Las Vegas Convention Center. I am joined by our regular Monday host, Barbara Weltman. Welcome back to the... Hey, Margaret, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm pretty good.
Good, good, good. I'm glad to hear it. Fun-filled first hour that we had. We've got some exciting guests coming in as well here in the second hour. We're going to be talking a little bit about technology, a little bit about leadership, and a little bit about entrepreneurship as well. Our next guest, has nobody else besides him, has a better understanding of the emerging workforce than Eric Chester. He's the premier expert on school-to-work transition and developing the core of work ethic in teens and young adults. He's also addressed more than 2,000 audiences from a plethora of industries. I love that word, plethora. As a keynote speaker, Eric holds the prestigious CSP Award. That stands for Certified Speaking Professional, and it's awarded by the National Speakers Association. It is the highest earned designation that you can get within that organization. He's also the 2004 inductee into the CPAE, that's the Council of Peers Award for Excellence, in the International Professional Speakers Hall of Fame, and that's an honor that is shared by less than 2% of all speakers around the world. Joining us from the Denver area, hey Eric, how are you doing today?
Hey, great to have to be on your show here, Bill. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being. I love to have thought leaders such as yourself. Say hi to co-host Margaret McLean. She's joining us from the East Coast. She'll be with us for the next hour as well. Let's dive right into it.
Hello. Thanks for being on.
Well, thanks for having me.
So I want to dive right into it because you are the work ethic expert here. And let's just cut right to the chase. Does the United States have a work ethic problem?
Well, I mean, you certainly, if you talk to me, you're getting one man's opinion, unless you consider that I've worked with over 150 major brands and 1,500 managers and leaders over the past 10 years, and have heard the challenge, the name, you know, or the term work ethic come up innumerable times working with companies and organizations. So it's not just me that says, yes, America has a work ethic problem. I mean, it's very obvious. I mean, our number one export now is jobs. I mean, you start thinking about, what you expect in the way of service and productivity and performance, you know, from the people that you work with and, the people that you expect to be service providers. And think about, is that the same as it may have been, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, God forbid, 30 years ago? It's just completely and totally changed.
Well, are workers any better or worse than the workers in Western Europe and Japan, for example?
Well, I don't know. Most of my research is done here in North America. Uh-huh. I don't know if they're better or worse than they are in various parts of the world. I can tell you that, during the programs and presentations I give, many times I have, members from, foreign countries, people that are visiting from respective, different cultures, and people come up and nod their head and go, that's exactly what we're dealing with in India or in China or in Argentina now or, in various parts of Europe. So I would definitely say that, the work ethic challenge can't be confined to any specific geographic region. I don't think it can be, confined to any specific demographic in terms of, psychographic, sociographic, socioeconomic levels, although it's clearly more evident in the young emerging workforce.
All right, and we want to get to that in just a minute. Our guest is Eric Chester. Eric, so that we're all on a level playing field, how do you define work ethic?
Well, I mean, if you look up the two terms, first of all, Bill, you ask 100 different people, you're probably going to get 100 different answers. A lot of times people think work ethic is just working long hours. So let's just, first of all, say what work really is. Work is an activity. It's an exertion of energy, towards some type of a goal. So if I'm working, let's just say I pick up a cinder block, I'm exerting energy. So if I pick up that cinder block and I put it in pile A and then pick it up off of pile A and put it back where I got it, and do that back and forth. I mean, technically, I'm working because I'm exerting energy. So if I do that for, 10 minutes, do I have a good work ethic? What if I did that for 10 hours in a day? Now I'm really working? Or is it more than that? So work is the exertion of energy. Ethic is what you know in your heart, with the values, the beliefs that you hold in your heart. So work ethic is basically knowing and doing, knowing what to do and doing it. And it's defined by those characteristics that anybody who's hiring you, paying for your services, is looking for in an employee or somebody to, you know, that they would hire to engage in their services. So we're basically talking about people who are, you know, doing something as a profession, which means you're getting paid for it. And so if you're looking at work ethic, it's knowing what to do and doing it, marked by those common characteristics that every employer demands in their employee or the people that provide their services for them.
All right, my guest is Eric Chester. He's author of the book Reviving Work Ethic, A Leader's Guide to Ending Entitlement and Restoring Pride in the Emerging Workforce. Now, Margaret, you've got young children that are just now starting to form a lot of their own values, how they look at the world and how those values may be the same as yours and different than yours out there. As you've got the expert on the line, somebody who's done a lot of work with young people entering into the workforce, what questions would you have of Eric so that you can guide your children in a direction that you think is going to be best for them?
Well, I have my oldest is actually a sophomore in high school, and she has a great work ethic. I feel that she works very hard in her homework and she gets A's. I also teach law at Boston College. So my question would be, I've noticed a trend over the years that it's harder and harder to get into colleges and universities. So I've noticed my students are working harder and harder and harder each year, so we seem to get a better crop of students. My high school student with her AP classes seems to be working harder and harder. So I feel that the work ethic has improved amongst students, good students. Well, what happens then when they get out in the workforce?
Well, first of all, if you're dealing with, and I don't know, Margaret, what kind of students you're dealing with, saying that work ethic has slipped is not an indictment on any particular demographic. So, where there are very bright students who are very engaged in the work that they are doing. So, for example, a student that may want to be a doctor, may spend hours and hours and study, and they could be incredibly bright, and they're working very hard towards that advanced degree to become a doctor, a chiropractor, an architect, an engineer, whatever that is. Now the question is, how does that transfer once they get out there and begin doing that as a profession? I had the director of patient recruiting from one of the largest hospital chains in America tell me just recently that there would be no limit to the number of zeros they would write a check to me for if I could teach them how to get the physicians that they recruit off of Ivy League campuses, Johns Hopkins, etc., to realize that patient care doesn't end at 5 p.m. on Friday. So,
wow.
What does that mean?
Wow.
They could be brilliant and test off the charts. But does that transfer into somebody who says, I'm going to give you my best? I'm going to do those, I am going to have the kind of ethic that says, I'm here for you. It's not about how much money I make. It's not about what my working conditions are. It's not about whether or not my contract says I'm only supposed to work, this many hours in this particular day. But you have all of me, the best of me. You have a Marcus Welby type of doctor sitting in front of you.
That's interesting. Do you think these young people are feeling entitled once they get out into the workforce then?
Absolutely. Again, do I feel that way, or does the research indicate that?
Exactly.
You Google entitled employees, and you'll see how many people are out there struggling with this issue. It is amazing. And you listen to the employers bemoan the sense of entitlement. And And particularly, it's easier. We got to stop. Realize, again, we're not tainting an entire generation. There's no specific birth year that if you were born in this year, you're entitled, and if you were born 2 minutes later of another birth year, then, boy, all of a sudden you're not entitled. That's not it. It is a mentality. It is a burgeoning mentality. It is, I've worked hard to get through this college, this school, this whatever, or I've been told I'm special by my parents, or, you know, I feel like I am due a better deal than what I'm getting. This is a great country. I should be making X amount of dollars doing this. Instead, I'm just getting, I'm getting ripped off because I'm not making the kind of money, or I don't have the kind of benefits, or, the kind of working conditions that I feel I'm entitled to. Is that mentality, permeating our society? Don't just take my word for it.
Ask employers. I see it with the young kids, though. My little kids on the baseball teams, where everybody gets a trophy.
Right.
So I think it starts there.
Well, and naturally it does. Whether it starts there or whether it starts at home, and then all of a sudden, you hear their mm-hmm. parents lobbying the coaches for playing time,
right.
Why isn't my kid playing, et cetera. So there's a lot of that leads into that. You start seeing entitlement behavior in young kids, no doubt about it. The average parent spends 3 to 5 minutes a day in meaningful dialogue with their son or daughter. Let me say that again. The average parent spends 3 to 5 minutes a day in meaningful dialogue with their kid. Now this could be corroborated by tons of research. You just find we're spending. I'm not talking about performance based commands like go clean your room or take out the trash. I'm talking about real dialogue. 3 to 5. Mm-hmm. That same kid is going to spend between 5 and 7 hours in front of a screen. And you think
wow.
about the television screens, the movie screens, the video game screens, et cetera, et cetera. So we have all this screen time, and we have so little face time that parenting is an issue that we could just go off on it. And we're talking now. Really, last week I blogged on a father that it's made its way around the internet. I think there's some 18 million views. But this
wow.
father of this teenager that was completely and totally frustrated because his teenager dared go on Facebook and aired her complaints 15 years ago about how her parents made her work around the house, do chores when she got home when school was over, and asked her parents would ask her to get him a cup of coffee, etc. And she just started ranting on Facebook. Well, this angry father went ahead and answered her with a video that he posted to Facebook, and then it got on YouTube, and now there's 18 million views. I'm talking about there were 1.8 million views on Friday, and 14 million views on Saturday. In 24-hour period of time, it went crazy. It was about an 8-minute, young lady, you brought this upon yourself, here's what's going to happen. And he literally takes out a .45 gun and shoots her laptop. Now, she's nowhere to be found. He's out in the middle
of
a field.
Oh, my God.
So there's no danger of anybody getting shot. He was just so frustrated that she used her computer to put this kind of, this kind of disparaging remarks about him. And he felt she was so entitled. Acted so entitled, he went out and bought this laptop for her. He had spent the whole previous day loading software on it. He gave her, he's obviously a concerned father, and turned around and felt completely abused because his daughter went out and ranted on him using social network and decided, okay, you're not going to have this, you're not going to be entitled to this any longer, and basically shot up her computer. Now you can get into where should he used a gun, should he have held his temper, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is there's so much of that. The reason there's so many people that hit that is because there's so many people that feel like their kids, their employees, whoever it might be, their students, act entitled. Why do you think I owe you this? Do you think I owe you this job, this school, this nice facility? Well, because back when I was your age, I had to walk to school in waist-high snow up to, both ways. We've all heard those stories. That's what's frustrating people to most employers.
Our guest is Eric Chester, author of the book Reviving Work Ethic, A Leader's Guide to Ending Entitlement and Restoring Pride in the Emerging Workforce. Eric, I'm going to switch gears on you because most of your work is done with young people, but I want to apply your principles to a different group if we can, please. How do you rate the work ethic that's right now now being done by the 535 members of the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives. How do they measure up on your work ethic metric scale that you've developed?
Well, I don't have a scale of 1 to 10. I mean, it's certainly not up to me to measure, you know, what, you know, how Congress and how the, you know, how various government bodies are working, the work that they're putting. But again, work ethic. Ethic is knowing what to do in your heart and in your soul. And if you know what to do and you go against that, you know, I know what I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm not doing that for whatever reason, then you're violating your own ethics. And we could go, you know, in depth in terms of how many people vote against what they know in their heart they should be doing, whatever side of the aisle you're on. So our senators and congressmen and our elected officials, are they working as hard as they possibly can? I don't know. I don't watch them 24 hours a day. So I don't know whether or not they're working hard. But let's understand that there are 7 markers. Now, in dealing with 1,500 different employers, I'm talking about from C-level executives of Fortune 500 companies down to the, you know, the manager at the local, you know, Burger King or Subway shop. I asked so many people, what is it you're looking for in a workforce? What is it you want? And we talk so much about skills in America. You know, are these people bright? Well, it's amazing. When you ask, what are you really looking for? What does it take to be successful in your organization? Very few people ever mention a skill. Like, well, to work for me, you've got to be able to program in JavaScript, or you better be able to drive a forklift, or you better know, you know, Microsoft Office suite of software. Everybody says, well, to make it here, you better have a positive, upbeat, enthusiastic attitude. I need to be able to count on you to be here on time. You got to be reliable. We're looking for dependable people that are real professionals, know how to separate their personal from the professional life. So when they're working for me, I know they're working. We want people who go above and beyond the call of duty. You know, take some initiative. Don't just do the minimum daily requirement, but will look to add value to my company or organization. We want people who will play by our rules. You know, aren't going to sit there and question everything that we ask them to do, or put something on a scale whether or not they like the rule or like the manager. But we'll go ahead and be a good team player. We need people who are honest, who if they call in sick, we know they're sick. It's not just that they just wanted a day off. And we want people who know something about, you know, service, who will give their best to our external customers, our internal customers, each other. So those 7 elements I put in my book in 7 meaty chapters that are titled with just 1 or 2 words, like positive attitude, reliability, professionalism, initiative, respect, integrity, and gratitude. Now you tell me how many people out there are out of work actively demonstrate all 7 of those characteristics. You tell me, here are people that are out of work, they're positive, enthusiastic, they're reliable, you can count on them, they never miss work. They really separate their personal from professional lives. They add value. You put them on your payroll, they make you money because they're adding value. They respect your rules, regardless of what they are. They're honest, you can trust them 100%. And they really have this gratitude. They're giving service no matter who they're dealing with. Those 7 fundamental values are non-negotiable, and they're vitally important to every company, every organization, every level.
Our guest has been Eric Chester, author of the book Reviving Work Ethic, A Leader's Guide to Ending Entitlement and Restoring Pride in the Emerging Workforce. Eric, you've probably intrigued some of our listeners out there. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Just remember, Reviving Work Ethic, 3 words, revivingworkethic.com. There's resources, materials, all kinds of information there. You can preview the book if you like it. If you go to facebook.com/revivingworkethic and like it, you can download the first 3 chapters for free. So there's no shortage of information out there. It's available. And this is the first book written on work ethic in over 100 years. So it bears, you know, it's a gut check. Look at it. Are we as Americans living up to a work ethic? Are we telling our kids one thing and doing something else? What can we do to regain our prominence in this world and become? Clint Eastwood told us during the halftime of the Super Bowl, hey, America, it's halftime. Okay, so it's halftime. We're troubled. Are we working as hard as we can? And I don't just mean putting in hours. Are we putting our best into those hours? Are we living up to the example that previous generations who built this amazing country for us have left for us.
Sage.
If we can, that's what it's all about.
Sage words. Our guest has been Eric Chester. Eric, thank you so much for being our guest here on The Business of Life. We'll talk to you down the road.
Bill, Margaret, thanks for having
me.
God bless you.
Thank you.